The Tom Woods Show, episode 463.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, if you've been meaning to start up that blog or website, before you do so, find out how you can get free publicity for it from me over at tomwoods.com/publicity. You'll also find a free ebook showing you exactly how to start it up, even if you know nothing about programming or design. I certainly don't. And also a free video tutorial taking you from no blog to a blog in just 5 minutes. So no more excuses. Start that blog. Check out tomwoods.com/publicity. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. It's the day after the first Republican debate, and I'm joined by Lou Rockwell to talk to me about what we just saw, what it all means, who the winners and losers were. Lou, of course, is the founder and chairman of the Mises Institute. He is publisher of LouRockwell.com. He was chief of staff to Ron Paul. He's got credentials as long as my arm, and I'm very glad to welcome him to the show once again. Lou, welcome back.
Tom, great to be with you.
This is a highly anticipated episode. I've been talking it up all week, so it better be good. That's all I have to say. Well, I actually took some notes last night. My wife and I watched it together, and I took some notes, but before we get into any specifics, I thought I might start off by asking you, bearing in mind that, you know, we're not really fans of these people, and based on the cheers of the audience, I guess I had forgotten how much I can't stand the GOP electorate, to be perfectly blunt about it. What is your impression of who walks away from this debate stronger and who walks away from it maybe seeing poll numbers going down, and then I suppose anybody else would be just treading water?
Well, you know, it's interesting just to mention, first of all, why did Fox put this in a gigantic basketball arena? So, of course, because they could have a big audience and it made a good stage for their show, it made the sound slightly odd, I thought. But that who was filling those seats? It was all Republican activists from Ohio, not regular voters, and all the employees of the Republican governor of Ohio, Kasich, which is why Kasich did so well in the applause. And it, of course, this was all just one of the number of setups that Fox News had. So maybe I'll mention, first of all, the Drudge poll. There's a poll on Drudge this morning where you can say you can vote for who you think won the debate.
Yeah.
And I think this pretty much represents my views, and it pretty much represents the Republican primary voter, not the Republican Party activist, not the guys who have jobs in the Kasich administration, but just the regular people. And Trump is at 49%. Cruz at 13%, Rubio at 9%, Carson 8%, Paul 7%, Kasich 4, Walker 4, Huckabee 3, and Bush 2, Christie 1. Although, and I also want to say I would give a sub-zero to the three creepy so-called moderators of Fox, who of course were not moderators at all. They were attack poodles for Rupert Murdoch, and their job was to kill Trump, and that's what they... That's what they set out to do. It turns out that the people from Fox are just as liberal, and maybe liberal in the exact same sense as if they were from the New York Times. They're militarists, of course, warmongers, but concerned about sexism and, you know, and those sorts of things. So I think they tried to kill Trump. Trump did not do as well as he should have done. On the other hand, as Rand Paul's campaign manager keeps reminding us, this is a marathon, not a sprint. So there are 10 more debates, and I think we'll see things a little bit differently the next time. And I'm sure it's not Fox, although it'll be some other evil network doing it. But I thought that Trump did okay. Charles Krauthammer, the neocon with the wonderful Dickensian name, said Trump collapsed, he's through, he's over, he's gone. I don't think that's right. And I think Trump, as I say, Trump did okay. To me, the startling thing was how badly Bush did. You know, this was the guy we're told who was going to be the presumptive candidate, and he raised all this money. He still looks like baby Huey. I mean, he's, you know, I never thought that I would say that somebody makes George W. Bush look good. That's a Jeb Bush.
See, that's why I took this as a slight victory for Jeb Bush, actually, because my expectations of what he would be like were so low because of George W. Bush that the fact that he can memorize his lines and deliver them convincingly seemed pretty good to me.
Well, you know, I think there's no question he's got a higher IQ than George W., but he doesn't have his – he has got no presence. I mean, he's a tall guy, so that's good. He's as tall as Trump, and so he's got a good presence in that sense, but – He still really comes across, I think, as an empty suit, as so many of these guys do. And Christie did very badly, you know, 1% in the Drudge poll, and I think that's about it. And he had some run-ins with Rand Paul. Rand, as I think was the conventional wisdom, had to go on the attack last night because he's had such a horrendous summer in terms of plummeting polls and terrible fundraising and so forth. So he started right off by attacking Trump for the fact, and because it was a setup question by Fox, oh my gosh, here you are in a Republican platform. Do you mean to tell me that you're not going to pledge to totally support any Republican who's nominated? And he said he would not. So all the functionaries in the room booed him, but otherwise, all these people are telling us, hey, we have to reach across the aisle. We have to be bipartisan. We can't just be partisan. And the people at Fox, the people in that hall, I think don't realize that regular Republicans, GOP primary voters, hate the GOP in the sense of the party establishment, the party leaders in Washington, Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. They hate their guts. So the fact that somebody is not a puppet of those people is actually not a negative, even though it was a negative in that hall. But I would say that Rand helped himself by jumping in and immediately attacking Trump. But then he, of course, attacked Christie, too, and I think he won that one as well. Christie, of course, taking the entirely totalitarian position that the government should know everything about every single person. Rand saying, well, they should only know about the terrorists. Now, Christie said that was not a practical kind of an argument. I think it probably is not a practical kind of argument. On the other hand, he argued for the Fourth Amendment and having getting a judge to give a warrant and so forth. So, you know, that was good.
Yeah, let me jump in on a couple of those things. I liked the fact that, of course, Trump put his hand up as the only one who would not take the pledge to endorse the nominee and so forth, because for one thing, it shows that he has guts. And I think that even though he knows it hurts him with the functionaries, the fact that people are watching him take a position that he knows can hurt him with some segment of the electorate is an indication of the reasons that the people who like him like him. Secondly, I like the idea that it gains currency, that it's possible for a candidate in a primary election not to go on to endorse the nominee. That's an altogether healthy development, and of course it continues in the honorable tradition of Ron Paul himself, who, as far as I know, in fact, he told me this over the phone. He said, I haven't endorsed the nominee since like 1980 or something. It was like something, you know, so don't worry that I'm going to endorse any nominee. There's no chance of that happening.
Nor, by the way, has he voted for a nominee.
Yeah, okay. Well, that I didn't realize.
Yeah, so that's, independent man.
Right. So, I mean, anything that keeps the party machinery off balance has to be a good thing. Then secondly, and by the way, that's another reason that Bernie Sanders is such a fake, because it goes to show that Sanders is not 1/1,000th the man Ron Paul is, because when push comes to shove, he'll get in line behind the Democratic nominee.
That's right.
In the same way, you know, Dennis Kucinich had his merits,
that's right.
But when push came to shove, he got right behind Obama. It's very, very hard to just stand right up to the whole establishment and say, no, I'm not going along no matter what you bribe me with, and that was Ron's position. Now, in terms of Rand, Fox News, frankly, handed him a gift on a silver platter by pitching a question to Christie that obligated him to attack Rand. Rand needed an attack last night. And as you say, from the start, he did. You know, he knew he wasn't going to get that many questions. He knew he wasn't going to get that much airtime. He did his best to go on the attack. You know, and it looked to me a little desperate. But in his shoes, it's exactly what I would have done anyway. You have to at least try. And you're right. I think he came off much better in the Christie exchange, particularly because we know based on Facebook comments and website comments that pretty much everybody sides with Rand. I mean, there are a few neocons who don't, but basically everybody sides with Rand. And I thought that his statement about hugging Obama was very effective for that audience.
Very effective.
You've hugged Obama. If you want to go hug him again, go right ahead. I mean, that was below the belt. Well, while we're talking about Rand, let's run down a few of the questions that were directed his way, and then I want to talk about Trump because I think Trump did well enough to keep on going, and as you say, he's got time to maybe tweak his performance. But I thought it was oddly a letdown, again, just from the point of view of political theatrics. But let's say something about Rand. He got a question about ISIS, saying, look, you said that the Republicans in some way were to blame for ISIS. Why do you think your own party is to blame? There was his opportunity, if you ask me. There was his opportunity to be different. I mean, yes, it would be very, very controversial, be worse than saying you're not going to endorse the nominee, but it would get attention. And what he needs desperately right now is attention and differentiation. And unfortunately, he more or less ran away from his comments, which were eminently defensible. Scott Horton could certainly brief him with all the information he would need to defend that position. And he kind of ran away and was left looking, frankly, kind of empty on that question.
No, that was a bad moment for him. But of course, I think for some time, despite his earlier comments, he's taken just the standard militaristic neocon line on ISIS. And they're all, ISIS is a very interesting organization. There's some people who think that the CIA and other, the French and the British intelligence agencies, Israeli intelligence agencies, had something to do with creating ISIS. It's been very convenient, of course, for the U.S. empire. And so I think there's a lot to be said about ISIS. Granted, he's not going to be able to go into that kind of stuff. But his original comment about how the Republicans were responsible was excellent. Too bad he backed down from that.
Then let's see the question on the Iran deal. Now here's the thing. I mean, this was the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of Rand supporters. And there was some, you ran Dan McCarthy's article
yes.
from the American Conservative saying that basically he's got to embrace this Iran deal if he's going to have any chance of really getting his father's followers to embrace him and to eat. I mean, you remember his father's followers, a lot of them dropped their jobs for 9 months to go work for this guy for free. And, Rand could use a dose of that kind of enthusiasm. And what he was reduced to saying was, look, in principle, I'm in favor of negotiations, as if that was enough of a enticement for libertarians. And then he had to go along and make a weak criticism of the deal. And then right after that, Huckabee made a very strong statement against the deal, rhetorically very strong. And Rand's answer is totally forgotten. And there's the idea that he's going to insert 3% nuance into an answer like that and think that's going to propel him is not reasonable.
Well, I thought Dan McCarthy made an excellent argument in his American Conservative article that this was maybe Rand's last chance to come out against the Iran deal. If he'd said some good things about foreign policy, but he's decided not. As to the volunteers, I always remember early in the campaign one of the Rand functionaries saying, we're very concerned about all the volunteers or the grassroots people who were so much trouble in the Ron Paul campaign. Oh, yeah, so much trouble, so much help, needless to say, so much heroic help. So we're going to take care of them. We're going to make sure that we don't, that we're going to handle them. We're going to control them. But of course, they haven't been there for the most part. You don't have anybody. And as you say, both of us know people who took a semester off from school, who took time off from their jobs, on their own dime went to New Hampshire, spent many months volunteering for Ron Paul. I'm not sure that's ever happened, certainly not in my lifetime, to any other candidate besides Ron. But there's, poor Rand. I mean, he's not had that kind of enthusiasm.
No, that's for sure. Then he was asked about gay marriage, and specifically about the question of religious freedom. Like, what would you do to make sure that people aren't forced to violate their consciences? And it seems like this is an easy answer to give, that you can say, look, sometimes there have been gratuitous cruelties shown toward people who are homosexual, and certainly you know, no one of goodwill supports any of that. But it, but this needs to go both ways, that in the same way that we shouldn't show hatred toward anybody for that reason, likewise, people shouldn't show hatred to anyone because they, you know, run a business and they feel like, you know, I'm a dance instructor and I don't want to be a dance instructor for a homosexual couple. Well, that's, you know, that's your business and it's your property and you ought to be able to make that decision and we ought to leave them alone. And I'm afraid that there is becoming a fanaticism on the other side that's seeking to destroy people who disagree on this, and I could not possibly oppose that enough. That would have been a perfectly good answer. I don't even remember his answer.
Well, he said, and of course, all these guys were giving canned answers, memorized answers. So what Rand said was, I don't want my marriage or my guns to be registered in Washington. Well, okay, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So all right, it's a slogan, but fair enough.
Yeah, it was not an answer. And when we think of gratuitous cruelties, Christians have been subjected to gratuitous cruelties for millennia. So I think, and we're seeing the rise of the hatred of Christianity with the state on the side of the people, the real haters. And so, yes, it's absolutely moral duty, a libertarian duty to defend the rights of property owners to discriminate. It's a basic human right to be able to discriminate. If you don't want to be, there are people you don't want to be associated with, that's your business, that's your right. So, but of course, nobody on that stage would say such a thing.
And of course, they know what, and of course, we know why they can't say that.
Well, because they're very powerful. You know, a very powerful interest group, extremely powerful interest group, that would want to slit their throat.
But moreover, they would specifically be then confronted with this. Well, then what's wrong? So okay, you're telling me that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was a mistake because that's really what that was all about. Nobody wants to walk into that minefield, so they're reduced to this pathetic argument about religious freedom, which is not a it shouldn't have anything to do with religion per se. It has to do with property, and nobody wants to say that. And really, the whole issue boils down to: should we have interactions if only one of the two parties involved wants the interaction to take place? That's what it boils down to. Should you force people into interactions that they don't want? Now, I understand that it's a lot to expect a politician to say that these days. Ron said it.
Done right.
It didn't hurt him any. I mean, Ron said it even though he knew that it would make his life more difficult and that the media would go after him. But the kids kept jumping on the bandwagon. The kids kept joining the campaign. It just didn't matter because he was so plain-spoken, and he just said, look, this is my position. I don't think people should be forced to do things they don't want to do. I mean, that you're going to tell me that's wrong? No, people should be forced to do things that they don't want to do. I mean, put them on the defensive. Is that really your position? So that so as I say, I saw Rand make an effort, given the limited time he had, to jump in here and there. But otherwise, given how frankly loud some of the other candidates were, and given how, you know, skilled they are as speakers. I mean, I don't like Mike Huckabee, but he's got a stage presence.
Oh yeah.
And he doesn't trip over his words. He's effective. He connects with his base very well. If Rand's not prepared to do that, and if the only way he's going to distinguish himself is by yelling out of turn at Donald Trump, that's not a debate strategy.
Well, it would have been nice to hear him say, you know, to defend private property rights. He got in trouble earlier in the campaign. And, of course, his dad always had just a magnificent way of phrasing things, too. And he did. It's one of the areas in which he had a huge educational effect on young people because they'd never heard such a thing, of course. They always, without really thinking about it, accepted the idea that to force interactions were moral. And when he explained to them from an economic standpoint and from a moral standpoint, a political standpoint, why this was disastrous, he changed people's minds, changed their hearts. And I still notice that effect, of course, in not only in that issue, but in many, many other issues. Ron Paul had a permanent effect on so many people. Whether anybody on that stage is going to be in that same category, I frankly don't think so.
Let's say a little something about Trump. I expected him to mop the floor with everybody, and he really didn't. I thought there were some of his answers that sounded very conventional, or at least
yes,
in politician speak, and demagogic in a dumb way, and not demagogic because he's talking about immigration per se, but just because it was just, we need to do this, and this country doesn't work, and we're losing, and this and that. So I thought that was unfortunate, and I thought he came off kind of looking like the caricature he's been portrayed as, which is that he's got no substance, he's got no specifics, he's just a clown. And unfortunately for him, I think a bit of that came through last night. And secondly, he didn't really go on the attack. I thought the way that he would really distinguish himself was by saying, look, you know, this one just gave you a pretty speech, but let me tell you the truth about this guy. I don't think he maybe had that information at his fingertips.
He also seemed to me slightly nervous. I know that's a very odd criticism to make of Donald Trump, but he was uncomfortable, and of course they were after him, but that could hardly have been a surprise to him. So I think he did say some good things. He said that he was the only guy on stage to have opposed the Iraq war and to have predicted that it would be a total disaster and would destabilize the whole Middle East. And of course,
exactly. And apparently that didn't hurt him in the Drudge poll any.
No. And I also liked it when the evil Megyn Kelly was listing all the terrible things all his terrible alleged sexist remarks. And he said, well, I only said that about Rosie O'Donnell. And the crowd cheered him, and there was Megyn Kelly was so upset, so viciously upset. I mean, she clearly just wanted to stab him.
Yeah.
Over that, and it showed, of course, the truth about her. And he said, "Look, I don't have time for political correctness, and neither does this country."
Yeah, the fact that he could take a question like that and turn it around in his favor obviously annoyed her, with the funny remark about Rosie O'Donnell. Like, don't you know you're being sternly lectured to for your bad behavior? You know, shut up and sit there and take it.
No, it's true.
All right, so I wrote down a list of names here, and as I was watching, like, who are the ones who really look strong? And just as debaters, again, not that I would vote for these people, but just in terms of what the debate was all about, who came off the strongest? And I have to say, from my opinion, the two strongest really were Rubio and Cruz. And I don't want to say that, Lou. There's no bone in my body that wants to say that. But I thought Rubio came off as very polished and very much in command and connected very well. And his statement about, how's Hillary Clinton going to come after me as somebody who doesn't understand what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck? That's how I was raised. Now, they all, to some extent, have the schmaltz about how they were raised, but I thought it worked very well for him. And I thought, you know, he hit on Dodd-Frank. I mean, he hit on some pretty decent points. Leaving foreign policy aside, which was a total disaster last night, Ted Cruz said the Iranians were on the verge of getting a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no intelligence agency on this planet or any other that would back him up on that. But his debate skills and his forensic skills from Harvard came out, I thought, very clearly. And I think he's going to get a real boost from this, Ted Cruz.
Well, I think the Drudge poll would bear you out. Cruz and Rubio were number two and three.
When you said that, I hadn't even seen the Drudge poll. And I think that Trump's finish in that poll is just because people just want to support Trump. It's not really because they thought he was the winner. So the fact that those two came out strongly, you're right. I think that does support that.
Yeah, and Carson, by this polling anyway, did some good for himself. I was not entirely impressed. He said a couple of interesting things. I don't find him impressive.
No, I thought he was very weak, very unsure of himself, not well prepared. He came off as a lightweight, and I'd never heard him speak before, but I thought, well, the guy's a neurosurgeon. He must be pretty sharp. And certainly in brain surgery, he may be very sharp, and it's maybe too much to expect him to be a politician on a debate stage. But when they asked him, would you have intervened in Syria, we never got an answer. We got the answer that the military has been gutted, and so because it's been gutted, of course Obama couldn't intervene. So does that mean he should have? Does that mean you would have? We got no answer whatsoever. I mean, that is what we kind of expect from politicians, but that was just really bad. And his answers, he would occasionally have a cutesy answer, like his answer about race, and I'm a neurosurgeon, and that's why I don't talk about race, because, you know, I that was pretty good. But otherwise, he sounded, frankly, like a sixth grader giving a book report. Very unimpressive.
Yeah, and of course, Rand did next best after Carson and beating Kasich pretty significantly in this poll. And one of the goals clearly of Fox and of the GOP was to promote Kasich last night, because he's a beloved establishment figure. Just as beloved, maybe more beloved than Bush. And since Bush is failing so badly, and the Koch candidate Walker is not doing as well as people would like, I think there's a reason Kasich is on the move in the polls, and why he got so much attention last night, so much speaking time and so forth. They love him. They want him. He's a horrible, horrible statist, a real totalitarian, no better than Christie or some of those guys, but beloved by Fox and the rest of the neocons.
It reminds me of what, I guess it was two cycles ago, when some people were pushing another governor, Tim Pawlenty, because I remember the first debate Pawlenty was going to be in. I'll never forget Sean Hannity saying, "Well, all eyes are on Tim Pawlenty." And I thought, Sean, speak for yourself. All eyes are on the greatest establishment bore in the history of the world? I mean, what are you talking about? And, of course, he sank like a stone. And I think Kasich and Walker both came out pretty much staying the same as before. And I mean, you know, the Drudge poll, you know, may have some of the pulse of the of America in it. I don't know for sure, but just on the merits, I thought they pretty much stayed the same. And with Huckabee, he sounded exactly like he's always sounded. And for Ron Paul to sound exactly like he's always sounded is bracing and refreshing, because he's iconoclastic and busting myths and saying the opposite of what people want him to say. But Huckabee just seemed like the same old guy. You know, just nothing new there. And Christie came up, and I thought, you know, at times I would say, well, I think Christie just gave a strong answer there, even though I don't agree with it. And my wife said, oh, no, he comes off as the reason you move away from the Northeast is to get away from a guy like that.
No, I think nobody likes Christie. And that was and even though he was promoted by the same people promoting Kasich and Walker now, he just couldn't carry it off. And then there was the Bridgegate scandal and all that. So he's just, he's through. He was never there. Somebody else who's through in the undercard debate yesterday was when Rick Perry referred to Ronald Raven as and what he'd done in immigration, and sort of just fed into what everybody thinks about Perry. He's got at least a screw loose, and he certainly is a horrible neocon too. So I would say he's gone. I mean, that's a good thing. I did notice that Rand, I've never heard him say this before, defined himself as a Reagan conservative. That's what he said. And of course, as we know, Reagan was a monster. I mean, he was a warmonger. He would raise taxes six times. He vastly increased the deficit, vastly increased spending, vastly increased government intrusion into our lives, vastly increased surveillance. I'm sure what Rand means, I'm a Reagan conservative in the rhetorical Reagan sense, that Reagan said some good things, but Reagan didn't do anything good.
Yeah, and the trouble is, I understand the reason that he made that reference there. It was to say that Reagan was not as much of a warmonger as you people. I understand that limited reason. The trouble is, everybody on the stage is a Reagan conservative. So again, why do I pick this one who sounds a little bit off to me on some things? And I've got a whole stage full of Reagan conservatives I can go for. So there's that. Did you notice that? I haven't looked at any figures on the total amount of time each candidate got, but it sure seemed, based on his poll numbers, that Rubio got a whole lot of face time.
Yes. And of course, Trump got the most. Rand got the least.
Yeah, I knew Rand got the least, and it wasn't for lack of trying. I mean, as I say, Rand was trying to jump in the best he could, and then he attacked Trump on single payer when Trump had said that he no longer supported single payer. If you're going to interrupt, you should have said, "Well, what in the world changed? I don't understand your answer. It's incoherent that a single payer might have worked in a different age."
Oh, yeah.
What does that mean? Different age 20 years ago? What does that even mean?
How could
That's
you
not
ever
an answer at all?
How could you ever have supported that, you know, that sort of socialist program? Is what he should have said.
Yeah, like, how are we supposed to believe that you've seen the light? And then, of course, you know, Trump's answer about bankruptcy was not super great, because basically he's saying, look, I only stiffed my creditors four times. And don't worry, these aren't, you know, little old ladies. These are big guys who can take it. Well, I
never personally declared bankruptcy. I just declared it four times for my business.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the only time I felt like Chris Wallace actually said something useful, which was, oh, come on. I mean, this is a distinction without a difference here.
Yes.
Now, on foreign policy, I mean, there probably isn't that much to say because it's so predictable. It was Walker was saying that, you know, as the day he gets elected, he's going to get rid of the agreement. He's going to impose stiffer sanctions. He's going to Oh, good grief. I mean, it was just that from every single one of them. There was no... and of course, how could you expect it? There was no sense of, well, let's see, everything we've touched has turned into a disaster. Every single country we've touched has gotten vastly worse after we touched it. Let's keep touching, seems to be the lesson they all drew. And everybody clapped and cheered. And
let's kill another million men, women, and children. That'll be great.
Yeah, that'll be great, because after that, it really should work. And it you know, they don't realize, or maybe they do and they just don't care, they sound exactly like the left on, well, let's see, we, you know, we've tried planning the economy to this extent or the other, we've kept interest rates historically low for 15 years, we've had stimulus programs and deficits, and it's produced zero net breadwinner jobs during that period, but if we keep on doing it, maybe it'll turn out okay.
No, of course.
It's the same thing.
Not enough troops were involved. Not enough vicious weapons involved, not enough people killed, not enough starvation caused, sickness. And all these people, of course, are proclaiming their attachment to Christianity. I was saved by the blood of Jesus and so forth. And let's murder everybody in the Middle East.
Yeah, nobody bats an eye.
That was Walker's comments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he wants to send he wants troops on the Polish border. He wants, I don't know if he just wants to send weapons or troops to Ukraine.
Weapons, I think he said, yes. But I'm,
yeah, it was weapons.
But,
okay.
You have to have trainers, I mean, too, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Who, you know, what's that? So now, there's one other question we have to look at. Rand on Israel. I almost forgot. I wrote that down later because I think that was his last question that he, one of his last questions that he got, that he had changed his mind on aid to Israel. And what does he think about that? And, you know, his answer that we can't give money that we don't have is a reasonable answer. And he tried to start off with, I don't want to give foreign aid to our enemies or people who burn the flag and so on and on. You know, I understand that's his standard talking point, but that's not going to work when they've just said the word Israel and they know, you know, you need to talk about Israel specifically. I mean, at least he stood there and said, we have to put everything on the table, and at least I'm trying to give specifics. I mean, that was better than he might have done.
Yes, but it's you know, the only answer that's acceptable in the Republican Party is we're going to sell Ohio and send it to Israel. I mean, you can't put Israel in the same category as the other foreign aid recipients. And in fact, this is an ongoing project within the Obama administration, as it was within the Bush administration, to put Israeli foreign aid in the Pentagon budget and not in the foreign aid budget, so it can't ever be touched.
All right, let's wrap up with going forward now. I guess I don't know when the next debate is. Do you offhand?
Well, it's one a month, so the next one is in September, but I don't know the date or the location or the network.
Now, maybe I've blocked it out because I choose not to remember it, but I don't remember from the previous two cycles the stage at which candidates start dropping out. I know, obviously, after a poor showing in a primary, you drop out. Some people do. But are there some who don't even get to the primaries? There must be some. They just don't have the money and the poll numbers aren't good enough and they just quit.
I think that's right, when that's going to happen this time. But there's certainly, I mean, how can somebody like Christie continue to run? Somebody like Huckabee, who's not raising any money at all. I mean, just very, very, just pennies in terms of political contributions. So I think and hope, certainly would be great to get rid of them. I should also add that I had a very tough time watching the entire 2 hours, because I find most of these guys boring in the extreme. And 2 hours worth, and the horrible people from Fox, and the horrible people in the audience, and the horrible people up on the stage, it was pretty difficult. And I wonder how many Americans actually watched 2 hours. You watched it. I watched it. This is still, despite all the glitz and the auditorium and the lighting and the colors and all, very boring, very boring. And these guys are all lying, or they're just giving canned talking points. Very, very seldom was any truth told. I don't know. I mean, I watched all the debates the last time because, of course, Ron Paul was in them. And just a spark of light and of truth and of justice in the darkness of the Republican Party. But we don't have that this time. What's your view? Do you think people are going to continue? Are people going to find these debates as riveting as we do?
Well, I think now that they've seen a debate with Trump in it, which I think was the key draw.
Yes.
I think the novelty wears off, especially because he, from my point of view, he was a disappointment. Because I thought at least he would carry me through the 2 hours, that he would be
swinging. Same. Yep.
Yeah, and at least he'd have some people who could feed him some good, dirt on the positions of the other candidates or the actions the other candidates had taken, and he could call them out as being hypocrites or whatever, inconsistent. Something interesting and fun. I mean, the guy who gave out Lindsey Graham's phone number should keep me entertained in this debate. And it was he sounded too much just like an angrier version of the other ones, which was too bad.
And he even backed off on immigration after you talked about building his wall. He said, and I want to have a great big door in it for the legal immigrants. Well, there are too many legal immigrants. I mean, there's never been a debate in this country about what was set out in the 65 Immigration Act to change the demographics of the country. It's never been allowed to be discussed. Why, for example... Guido Holzmann, as I do, the great German economist, Austrian economist, brilliant intellectual. We weren't able to get him to come. We never were able to get a work visa for him, despite hiring expensive lawyers, having a lot of help from a university and our own people. You can't get a German here. Germans are barred. So we're Spaniards. So we're Irishmen, Englishmen, Italians, Poles, Romanians, Danes, Swedes. They're all barred. Why is that? What was the reason for that? And, of course, it was to bring about the demographic revolution that we're seeing, and it stepped up under Obama. So it was a great thing that Trump was raising this issue. Is he backing off? Is he becoming more politically correct? He was a disappointment as a performer last night. Maybe he's going to even be – I notice Ann Coulter, who I don't agree with on virtually anything, but she said she was terrified he was going to back off. And seems to me maybe she was right. Maybe he is backing off. Which would give you, it seems to me, no reason to root for Trump whatsoever.
All right, let me when we say root for Trump, we just like watching him.
Of course.
His policy positions are just horrifying.
No, you don't want to root for anybody's election. I mean, anybody who wants power over us is disqualified from having power.
Yeah, of course it is. Right. But, I mean, at least keep me entertained.
Yeah.
Can't even do that, what are you good for? Well, what I'm going to do is on the show notes page for today, which is tomwoods.com/463, I'm going to link to a few things that'll be of interest. I'll link to that Dan McCarthy article on what Rand ought to do that you and I both liked. I will link to Rothbard on immigration, his views toward the end of his life, the article he wrote for the Journal of Libertarian Studies. I'll link to that, showing how his thought evolved on what an anarcho-capitalist should think about immigration. So put that. And then also, of course, a link to your political theater blog, which people can reach by going to lourockwell.com, clicking on political theater. I am addicted to this blog. It's getting me through the election season because you find the most interesting pieces. Your commentary is absolutely unique in the political world. I love it. I'm starved for it. I want you to blog three times as much as you do. I mean, it's just great. And the kind of chit-chat that we've been having is the kind of stuff you read on Lou Rockwell's political theater blog every single day. So I will link to that as well at tomwoods.com/463. Well, Lou, maybe we have to put ourselves through this exercise once a month until they stop doing this to us, but I sure appreciate it.
Let's hope we have some entertainment the next time.
That's right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, everybody. Remember, I release a new episode Monday through Friday, so make sure you're getting your daily serving of liberty education right here on the show. And as I said at the outset, if you are thinking about starting that blog, but you just need a little bit more enticement to do so, well, remember, I'm giving you free publicity if before you start that blog, you check out tomwoods.com/publicity. And in addition to that, I've got all kinds of step-by-step instructions for how you can get a nice, attractive blog going, and you can do so in just 5 minutes. Plus, I've got a free ebook with all kinds of resources that I use that have been really helpful to me that I recommend to you. Check that all out at tomwoods.com/publicity. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.